Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Thanks for listening. Comprador's third album, Important, is a surreal adventure that balances original music with both subtle and overt musical homages. The subject matter of the album ranges from the apocalyptic to the irrational. It is simultaneously a strange amalgam of solo compositions by Charles Dardin and beautifully intertwined guest appearances. All the while, Important is loosely based on the exploration into the abject horror of internet dating in 2018. I sat down with Charles Dardin in the studio to talk about Important, the challenges of performing Comprador's music in a live setting, and why this is probably the last Comprador album we'll see in Cincinnati for a good long time. Charlie Dardin, thanks for coming in and being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
So this is the third record for Comprador.
This is the third one, yeah.
And it's called Important?
It's called Important.
I understand it comes from a cardboard box that you found outside of Kroger?
Yeah. Nothing was really coming to me for the title, and I was parking to buy groceries, and I saw, I don't know what grocery had been packaged in this box, but somebody had left a flattened cardboard box in the Kroger parking lot, and I won't say which specific one because I don't want to get the employee in trouble, but it had a big sticker on it that said Important, and I thought of how it just seemed really funny to me as an album title for something I'm going to sneak out pretty fast. I kept laughing at it when I saw the box, so I decided that would be the title of the album.
And you also noted that the theme, if you will, of the album is, you talk about the abject horror of internet dating.
Yeah, that was a major part of my personal life experience the past year. And it's not in every song on the record. I mean, maybe the pessimism that it engendered did kind of filter into the lyrics on every track. But a bunch of the tracks do address that to some extent.
Let's talk about some of the musical collaborations that you have on this album, because throughout the history of Comprador, it's been all about collaborations and people coming together to make music. Who appears on this album?
We have Jackie Hauser from Mad Queen sings harmonies on a song. Kate Wakefield, who does solo music and also is in Lung, sings harmonies and does a couple of lead vocals on the second to last track. Gabriel Birnbaum from the band Wildermaker, I think he also has a solo record coming out this year, but he plays saxophone on a couple of the songs. And Steve Wethington, who mixed a few of the tracks, he did a synth pad on the first song. So all of those folks contributed to the record. Jackie and Kate and I were all in a cover band for charity, I think maybe 2 winters ago. I guess that was the first time I interacted with Jackie, but Kate and I had played shows together before. Gabe's band played in town a couple of times, and I really liked them, and we were Facebook friends, and I saw he posted on his page something like, hey, I'm hoping to record saxophone on albums. If anybody's interested, hit me up. So I messaged him immediately, like, do you want to play on one of the songs on this record I'm working on? And he said, sure, and I loved it, so then I was like, you want to do another one? And I emailed him that one as well. So that was how that came about. And Steve, just during the mixing process, we thought, like, this lead needs a little bit more heft to it. So he just doubled one of the parts. So those are the collaborators on the recordings.
And if I'm looking at the notes right, different parts are recorded in different places at different times. You even did some recording in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's right. I was home with my parents for about a week last spring because my sister was graduating from college, so I went and stayed with them for a couple of days, and then we drove up to New York City for the ceremony. My dad has a really cool, it's like a 150-year-old baby grand piano in the house. So just on that and like the acoustic 12-string they had there, I recorded some backing tracks on my iPad, and I was pretty happy with them, so didn't bother re-recording them. They just made it onto the record. And that piano has a really neat vibe to it. Like, I have an upright piano that I use a lot for recordings, but it's got a different quality of sound to
it. What kind of interface did you use? What kind of microphones?
Actually, all the snare sounds on the record, we recorded with one of these that we're talking into, one of the Shure SM seven Bs, I think these are. All the drum sounds I did at Audio Grotto with Michael Shank. He's in a band called Build Us Fiction. There's a really neat upstairs room. I think they use it as an event space there, but it's like a huge hard floor and like big stained glass windows, a big space, so you can get like a huge drum sound in there. We actually done an EP there a few years ago, but I always felt like it was kind of a missed opportunity because we didn't have a whole lot of original material at the time. So I think we did like three original songs and two covers there. So I always wanted to go back there and get that sound again, but use it on more material. So that's why I picked that spot to do all the drum recording.
And then I think Mike Montgomery at Candyland also
had
a hand in this.
Yeah, I ended up redoing a bunch of the vocals. When I did the first shot at the vocals on the album, it was like right around when I had done an In Utero cover set for a Halloween show at the Tavern. So I think my voice was kind of shot as a result of that.
That would do it, yeah.
So we decided to redo a bunch of them. So I talked to Mike and we re-recorded a bunch of the vocals at Candyland. I think on most of those, I got an old RCA ribbon mic, like 60 or 70 years old maybe, at an estate sale for real cheap. Wow. And had somebody fix the ribbon in it. And I kind of use that as like my primary vocal microphone. It's a little weird sounding, but I think it suits the timbre of my voice for whatever reason.
Well, let's take a listen. The song I want to hear is called Rocket League. This one's kind of interesting in the sense that it starts off slightly abruptly, in the sense that it kind of fades in with this odd little synth sound, but then it just cuts off dead at the end. What's the song about?
Lyrically, this song is kind of apocalyptic, sort of in the vein of, I'm sure a lot of people have apocalyptic songs, but thinking specifically like Nick Cave's 15 Feet of Pure White Snow. But in this case, I was taking the bus to work. Usually I bike, but I don't know if my tires were flat or something. And I was just imagining a rain of transparent acrylic just kind of freezing everybody in the positions that they were in on the bus, just because nobody was interacting anyways. So you'd hardly even notice much of a change if it was divinely transparent enough. That was the conceit of the lyrics of this tune. I don't know if any of that comes across or not.
Well, this is Rocket League from Comprador.
Yeah.
does, just like you're into it and all just, it just cuts.
Yeah, it originally went on for a couple more minutes, but I didn't like the ending, so I just deleted it, and I thought it worked better, especially like for the flow of the record that
way. I was going to ask you about that and how it pertains to the other songs on the album.
Yeah. It, you can kind of hear it because, like, it's mostly going in the one groove for most of the song, and then it changes a bit at the end and then cuts. It stayed in that groove for, like, another 5 minutes, because on the demo, I did a variety of things over it, and I thought it sounded interesting, but then just seemed too flabby or something in the recorded version.
As we said, this is the third Comprador record. The last one we spoke, I guess, was last April when you put out Downstream. Yeah. And you had Brianna Kelly with you. I guess I didn't realize throughout this whole project that 90% of Comprador was Charlie Dardenne. You do the drums, you do the vocals, you do the guitars and piano. But, I mean, there are other, like we said, guest artists, but it's really kind of essentially a solo project.
Pretty much, yeah. It wasn't originally, like the first record, I was collaborating with Aaron Collins, and he played drums and he would sing. He wrote a couple of tunes on the first record. But after he left the band, it just was faster to kind of assume all those duties onto myself. And then if I wanted to play a live show, I'd teach people how the stuff went, and we'd work out a live arrangement of it. But it's hard to coordinate schedules, I guess, as any kind of adult in any professional capacity. But as a musician, trying to figure out people's job schedules and how those interact with their rehearsal availability and all that stuff. If you're trying to write a lot of things quickly, I found it easier to just record it myself and teach myself how to play some of the instruments.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you about the Comprador live shows. How often does Comprador play out live, and how do you make those arrangements and essentially teach these songs to other musicians?
We've done like 2 shows this year so far, I think, which isn't a lot. We've been more active occasionally in the past. I think we have another one coming up at the end of the month for at least like the digital release of this stuff. Typically, I'll just show people the recordings, and everybody's learning style is a little different. So sometimes you'll want to sit down one-on-one and show them how the parts go. Sometimes it makes more sense to do stuff like in an ensemble setting. It just both depends on the material and the individual performers.
Have you ever just completely changed a composition around because it worked better to play it live this way as opposed to the way it was on the album?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes they stick pretty close to the recordings, but that's like pretty frequent that they'll change in the live iteration. The last song on this record is called Voice Coil Unwound, which is just like acoustic guitars and piano, but we've done a louder electric version of that, and I have to sing the vocal melody an octave up because you can't hear my lower register over the full band. I'm sure there are other examples of that, but yeah, we usually end up having to tweak at least some component of it.
May 31st, that's the unofficial official release date for Important?
Yeah, that's the plan.
What's involved with all that?
Well, it'll be at the Chameleon in Northside, and Mad Queen and a band called Bi are going to play. I play in both of those bands too. So I'll be wearing myself out. I don't know if you know Phasmids, but Jared, their bassist, writes stuff in Bi, which is a drum-bass duo. It's kind of grungy. And Mad Queen is Jackie Hauser's band, melodic, kind of classic rock-influenced trio. And she drums and sings in the live version of that. But she kind of does similar to what I do on recording. She'll play all the parts in the studio. She has a couple singles out like that so far.
Well, now we have to approach the sad part of the conversation where we talk about you're moving away.
Yep.
You're leaving us. Why?
Yeah, I'm moving to Philadelphia in June. There are a few different reasons, primarily family stuff. I'd just like to be able to help out with my grandparents more in person than just kind of coordinating by email with my parents. Both of my pets died within the past 6 months, so I don't really have any, what would you call them, dependents in my house. That was a factor previously, but
you had rats, right?
Yeah, I had two rats, and they're both gone. Yeah, Magazine was one. He lived a really long time for a rat. Wobble was the other one. They both had kind of post-punk names, because Magazine was, I think, Barry Adamson was in that band.
Mm-hmm.
And Ja Wobble was the bassist in Public Image Limited, at least on their first couple of records. So
when's the official move date to the Philadelphia area?
I think I'm going to play this show on the 31st and then head out on June 1st and start driving. I don't know if we'll do a 1 or 2 day drive, but for the law firm where I work, they have an office in Philadelphia that I'm transferring to, and I'm scheduled to start there Monday, so hopefully no issues with the drive over the weekend. But I've done that drive before. It's not too bad.
I really appreciate you coming in and talking to me and telling me about the new album. I'd like to play another song from the new release. I'll let you pick this one. Which one do you want to play?
This song's called You'll Notice Soon. There were like a couple of stylistic homages on this record. This was the one where like I really want the Jesus Lizard to do a reunion album, and they haven't been. So I tried my hardest to write a Jesus Lizard song. So if you hear this, Dwayne Dennison, this is for you.
This is You'll Notice Soon from Comprador, from their upcoming record, Important. Thanks again, Charlie.
Thank you, Jim.
My thanks to Charles Dardan for stopping by to talk about Compradore's third album, Important. The digital release party for Important will take place on Friday, May 31st at the Chameleon on Hamilton Avenue. You can visit wvxu.org/lx for links to more information. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. This episode was recorded and produced by me, Jim Nolan. The theme music for this episode is by Scott Holmes and comes from the Free Music Archive. You can find out more at freemusicarchive.com. Until next time.